We are one planet amongst eight. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Poor Pluto. I feel sorry for Pluto. When I was a kid, there were nine planets, okay? Pluto was a planet, but somehow along the way, we've changed our opinion of what a planet is, so Pluto has been voted off of the island of planets. How many continents are there? Well, there are seven. Africa, Antarctica, Asia, Australia / Oceania, Europe, North America, and South America. Now, please be noted that some geographers and scientists now refer to it as six continents. Why? Well, because Asia and Europe are technically one landmass, so they no longer call it Europe and Asia. They call it Eurasia. All right, so that is now a term that you will see in some of the books. Poor Europe and Asia. They've gotten smooshed together. How many countries? There are currently 195 countries on our planet. No, I will not be naming them all. No, I do not know the capitals of them all. I got one, United States of America. That one I've got. How many people are on the planet? 7.8 billion people now live on this planet. That's a lot of people. No, I don't know all of their names either. All right, but 7.88 billion people. And amongst those people, there are currently seven living generations. So if you are living on this planet today, you fit into one of these generations. There is what is called the greatest generation. You were born between 1901 and 1924. So yes, if you're in this generation, you are over 100. I don't think we have any of this generation present today. There is the silent generation. If you were born between 1925 and 1945, this is your generation. There is the baby boomer generation. 1946 to 1964, there are plenty of people sitting here today that this is your generation. This is when you came onto this particular planet. There is the Generation X, born 1965 to 1979. If you look at this, that's a little different color than the others. Yes, it is. That's because I think it's fair that you know. This is my generation. This is where I was born into. I'm an X-generationer, I guess. I am from Generation X, born in 1968. And you can do the math to figure out how old that makes me. There are the millennials, born 1980 to 1994. There is Generation Z. I have two kids that live in this generation. And this is from 1995 to 2012. And now we have Generation Alpha. And this is 2013, and well, it goes all the way up to 2025. And you're looking and you think, well, that's really interesting, but why is all this important? Well, here's what you need to know. We all live on the same planet, but there are many cultures on this planet. And when you start pulling culture apart, there are two main things that people talk about when it comes to culture. Thing number one is, where do you live? Your culture is different depending on whether you live in America versus you live in South America. Your culture is different whether you live in East Coast versus West Coast of America. I hate to tell you this, your culture is different whether you live in Southwest Virginia or Northern Virginia. Where you live matters about your culture. You know what the other determining factor in culture is, right? Not where you live, when you live. If I was to sit around and talk with some of the people that are from the generations that came before me, then you're going to tell me about how good the good old days used to be. You're going to tell me about technology, you know, how technology has ruined things and how things used to be and how things used to be simpler. And I've had these conversations. I know I have parents. I actually have a sister that's in the generation before me because, hey, she missed the cutoff of my generation, so she's a baby boomer, not an Xer. Okay? And I hear this. And if I go and I talk to the younger generation, the people that came after me, and I start talking to them, they're going to tell me what an old fogey I am and how of a touch out of things I am because, you know what? I still use a keyboard and a mouse, and they have little devices they do this on. Okay, our culture's changed not based on just where we live, but when we live. And well, your culture, like it or not, greatly impacts what you believe. Where you live and when you live will change what you believe. It can't be helped. You can take a generation, especially if you take multiple generations, you go back to somebody that is maybe from the silent generation, and you put them in the same room, and you put them in the same room with somebody that's from maybe the generation Alpha, or maybe the generation Z, and you put them in the same room, and they start talking, and they start talking even about something that's basic about Christianity or faith, and it's going to sound like they're from two different planets, because terminology changes, lingo changes, perspective changes. People change. They're not the same as they were eons ago. How we communicate changes. We've gone from letters to telephone to email to texts. It all changes. And well, it impacts what I believe, and therefore, what I believe, well, that's the root of my worldview. So that means what I believe about God, what I believe about faith, what I believe about Bible, while God is today the same today, yesterday, and forever, I hate to tell you this. As you've moved through the generations, it has been impacted by culture. Not just where you live, but when you live. How do I know this? The numbers tell me. Among the millennials, 44% claim a biblical worldview. And this is important because this is the generation where we lost home court advantage. See, if I back up just one into my generation, 53% claim a biblical worldview. And if I back up another generation, well, the number goes up a little bit. There wasn't a lot of drop between the baby boomers and Gen Xers. 54% claim a biblical worldview. But if I back up a little bit further, and they kind of lump the people that did this study, kind of lump the silent generation and the great generation, they lump them together and they call them the elder generation, 62% claim a biblical worldview. Now, I began to look at that, and there's an obvious conclusion. The older the generation, the larger the biblical worldview. We went from 44% to 62%, going backwards up, so it's dropped by 18 points. It's interesting, I picked up the paper yesterday. Well, okay, I picked up the paper on my phone. Okay, I do not still go buy a paper anymore. It comes on my phone, and I sat down and I was reading some articles from the USA Today because I like to read papers that have an alternate view of how I see things just because it helps me learn. It helps me understand culture. And their lead story yesterday was the declining view of Christianity. It was the headline right on the front page. And I thought, wow, it's really nice that they've decided to chip into my sermon. Make no doubt about it. Our worldview has changed when it comes to the Bible. And what your real worldview is all about and what has actually changed is who is God? Now, that's a really good question. Did you know there's lots of answers for who is God? Let me just give you a few of the top answers. For some, they worship humanism. There's a lot of isms in this, and in that one, man is God. Not man as in physical man, but humanity is God. We are the peak, we are the pinnacle, we're at the top, we're in charge, we are God, the human race. There is Marxism, which believes government is God. Yeah, we elect the best of the best, we elect the officials, and they're supposed to make the call, they're supposed to decide how things go. They are our God, so to speak. There's naturalism, and that means the cosmos is God. You know, that's the vast expanse of the universe. We worship nature. What nature said is how it's supposed to go. Okay. There is postmodernism. And this is the one that everybody seems to like. It's whatever is God. That doesn't mean whatever, like we hear today. It means whatever. Whatever you want to be God, can be God. That means if I decide I want to be, I want the tree to be my God, the tree can be my God. That means if I decide that I want to be my God, I can be my God. I can change my God from day to day, just like I change my socks. It's whatever happens to be at the top of the pinnacle that day, that's who I am going to allow to be God for me. Then we have this thing that people call New Age, and there's really nothing New Age about it. It's as old as time. It's called pantheism. And that means everything is God. Which they're saying whatever and everything. Like, whatever as I pick, everything means that everything out there is God, which really means at the end, since everything is God, there really is no God. And all of these things begin to come together and they begin to work together. And then it begins to come into the idea, we bring it into the church, and here in the church, here in the Christian church, we believe God is God. And I'm sure you're thinking, duh, everybody knows that, right? God is God. Really? God is God, well, that means that if you truly embrace a biblical worldview, you make no life decision without considering God. Now, notice I put the word life decision in there because I do not think God cares whether you use Crest or Aquafresh toothpaste. I don't think he cares about what kind of car you drive. I don't care. I think he cares about what kind of deodorant you wear. We're talking about life choices. You should think about the idea that if I have a biblical worldview and God is God, then I don't make any life choices without first putting God into the equation. I can boldly claim God is God, but the proof will be in every life choice I make. So the more life choices you make without considering God first, then you understand what you were doing. You were making the slide down, and you were saying, it's not really a biblical worldview because God is not God. And then you understand also what you're doing, right? You're passing that perspective forward to the generation in front of you. You want to know why there was such a big decline between Gen X and the next generation? It's because the Gen Xers, we were busy chasing something else, and that was probably the first generation that the full generation didn't really have that much parental influence. It had a bigger influence from outside the family instead of inside the family. And it changed the perspective. That means the more choices you make without placing God's view first, the less of a biblical worldview you have. Like it or not. You can stand here all you want and say, well, I believe the Bible and I believe God is God. Really? Show me your choices. Show me. Are they based on the Bible? Are they based on Scripture? Are they based on putting God first? Well, no. But I hate to tell you this. You don't have a biblical worldview. Because in the biblical worldview, God is God. He is the center. And then when you take him out, then you're no longer standing in the middle of the center. You can put your center on one of the other isms that I showed you. Now, this is all very important to us in our study of in the world but not of the world, because when you start making choices based on a biblical worldview, there will be confrontation. Don't believe me? Try this one. Tomorrow when you walk into work and you've got all the people around, just stand up in the middle of the room and yell, Jesus. You know what? There's going to be a lot of people there, huh? And when you start talking, there is going to be confrontation. And in the middle of that confrontation is where we want to rest today as we take a look at John chapter 17, verses 14 through 16. We are going to look at the clash of cultures. Where you live, when you lived. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them. For they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of it. So we're going to deal with a very popular four-letter word today. Hate. Jesus used it right here in John. Hate. And that word, if you look it up, hatred is an intense, negative emotional response towards certain people, things, or ideas, usually related in opposition or revulsion towards something. Hatred is often associated with intense feelings of anger, contempt, or disgust. So hate is a negative emotion. Therefore, if you are a constantly negative person, you're going to be more susceptible to hate. Hate always produces a response, and it always has a specific target. There is no such thing as generic hate. Okay, I use this term very loosely sometimes. I hate lima beans. I do. You know, maybe I do hate them because they are disgusting. And it does make me angry when they're the only vegetable on the table. So maybe we throw that word hate out, but you understand, you have to have a target. I can't say I hate without having a very specific target. Just because I disagree with something or somebody does not mean I hate it or them. So we throw this word hate around a lot of times, and the thing is, yeah, there is a lot of hate in our world today. It doesn't take very long for you to hear that. You can pick up a newspaper, you can watch a TV show, and it just seems to be an awful lot of hate in our world. But unfortunately, we have designated the open discussion of ideas as hate. Today, if I try to have an honest discussion with somebody, and if I disagree with you, then somehow I am hating on you. Somehow I hate you just because I don't hold your opinion or your view. And that's not what hate is about. Just because I disagree with you, we can still discuss ideas. I have lots of people in my life that I totally do not agree with their view, but I've had some very enlightening conversations when it comes to listening to what they think they believe. But we've put up kind of like a force field in the church that we can't have an open discussion about ideas because that's going to become worldly. Really? That's not hate, folks. We are classifying the disagreement with hate. Just because we disagree with one another, then I must hate you now. No. But we've tried to do this. We have taken this word hate and we've so messed with the idea that we are defining a stand for truth as hate. This is not my quote. I learned it at a conference back in February. I've used this already. Truth sounds like hate to those that hate truth. So just because I speak truth does not mean that I hate somebody. It means that I see truth and I am saying truth. And if you don't agree with the truth, that doesn't mean that I hate you. It just means that your target is not me. What's your problem? Your problem is truth. So this all seems somewhat justified these days. We begin to talk about this idea of hate, and there's so much of it going around. And well, we need to remember, truth is an absolute, not a weapon. See, some of the sensitivity that's being felt today that we see out in the world, it's not hate as they're thinking, like Jesus talked about, where it says that the world will hate us. We have created the issue because we've taken truth and we've started using it as a weapon. We tried to beat people over the head with truth. And understand, when I talk about truth, we're talking about an absolute. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a weapon that I have to go out and whop people over the head with a Bible to say this is what truth is. Get it? And not every opinion needs to be shared. Just because I have an opinion about truth, we need to remember, I don't always have to share every opinion. Sometimes silence is golden, is what they always told me. I don't have very much gold in my life because I don't have very much silence in my life. Sometimes in our efforts to appear truthful, we come across as downright hateful. I have met people that have the best of intentions in the world to share what they think is truth, but when it comes out of their mouth, it almost makes your hair stand on the back of your neck. You know why? Yeah, they're being truthful. But they're also being hateful in the way it's being delivered. And you know what happens, right? People feel hated. They start hating back. So that brings us back to John 17, because I do want to kind of talk more about not generic hate. I want to go back into this idea, the world hated them. So specifically, the they that Jesus is talking about, he is talking about the 12 apostles. So Jesus is there, and we're getting near the end of his ministry, and he's got them all aside, and Jesus kind of steps to an aside, and he starts this idea about prayer, and he starts praying for the disciples, because he understands where they are going, the world is not going to welcome them with open arms. Nobody's going to hug them and say, yeah, thanks for coming. It says that the world is going to hate them. But in the bigger picture, he is speaking about his followers all throughout time. And now this gets real personal. Because guess what? I claim to be a follower of Christ. Therefore, I can pretty much expect that the world is going to hate me. I don't want to be hated. Do I? I mean, that's hard. I mean, I don't want to be out in the world full of hate, especially if I am going to be the target of that hate. I keep clicking too early this morning. But you understand that you're not the target. You see, when you start beginning talking about hate in the world, this is not about old versus young. We do this a lot. We have a word for this. We call it the generation gap, right? You know, they don't understand me because they're too old, or they don't understand me because, well, they just ain't got life yet together. But it's not old versus young in the hate we're talking about. It's not nation versus nation. This is not a battle for America versus the rest of the world. This is not a battle for making this the great country or God's country. This is not about the nation. I hate to tell you this, the hate I'm talking about isn't race versus race. You're not ever going to fix racism. Yeah, you can quote, you can hear that right from this pulpit and you can put it out. You're never going to fix racism. You know why? Because racism is a conflict that comes from us. And as long as we keep focusing on differences, you're never going to fix racism. It's never going to be male versus female either. We've had the battle of the sexes ever since Adam and Eve. But that's not what this hate's talking about. And you know what? The hate that Jesus is talking about here, it's not even right versus wrong. It's not I've met a bunch of standards and you didn't meet the standard, therefore you're right versus wrong. Therefore I hate you because right versus wrong. Jesus is talking about something very, very, very unique. He's talking about godly versus worldly. In his prayer, he is looking out and he's saying, if I send these people out in the world and they decide to live not of the world, then confrontation is going to come. Please protect them. I love what he said. He didn't say, please remove them. He didn't say, please help them get together and build an armory up so that they can protect. God, you protect them, Father. Because they're going out into the world, and I'm asking them to not live of the world. And sometimes, in the church, as a believer, I feel like I am the target of hate. John chapter 15, verses 18 through 25. If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. This is Jesus talking. If you belong to the world, it would love you as your own, as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but you are chosen, but I have chosen you out of the world, that this is why the world hates you. Remember what I told you? A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obey my teaching, they will obey yours also. They will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would not be guilty of sin, but now they have no excuses for their sin. Whoever hates me hates my Father as well. If I had not done among them the works no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. As it is, they have seen, and yet they have hated both me and my Father. But this is to fulfill what is written in the law. They hated me without reason. And a lot of times, I feel hate. But I have to remember something. You're not the target of the hate. What? Jesus said you will be hated if you take a stand on biblical worldview, but if you are not the target of this hate. Remember? The hate has to have a specific target. And as Jesus is sitting here talking to his disciples, he reminds them, Jesus, I'm the target. Jesus says, if the world hates you, keep in mind they hated me first. Their issue is not with me. Their issue is not with the church. Their issue is with, when it all boils down to it, what do I do with Jesus? That's the issue. The issue is God. Whoever hates me hates my Father as well. You know what? It's not that hard. If I want to get somebody that believes in a God or believes in multiple gods, it's not that hard to get them to add another God to their list, right? The issue comes is when you say, you know what? Jehovah is the only God. There's only one. You can only pick one. Now we've got the confrontation set up. But you understand, they're not hating me. They're hating the fact that they have to make a choice. There's only one God. You only get one seat, one throne, one place, and you get to choose who gets to go on that throne. Keep in mind, though, when you make the choice, all the consequences go with it. And that brings us to the next thing that they're struggling with. When we see the world is hating on us, is hating on the church, is hating what we're saying, then you understand the real issue is not me. The real issue is they're struggling with their own sin. It says, if I had not done the things among them, this is Jesus talking, then they would not be guilty of sin. Jesus came to seek and save the lost, but in seeking and saving the lost, he had to reveal to them, hey, guess what? There's sin. There's things you have to deal with. There's things that you have to work on. And you know what? That conflict that goes in, it is an inner conflict because they're hating on faith. The fact that I say that this is my God and this is what I believe, then you know what? It causes a conflict between us because what if I don't want to believe that? You understand, you were created with free will. You are free to believe whatever you want, not given by the Constitution of the United States. It was given by Creator God. You are free to believe whatever you'd like to believe. And what you believe will be your faith. And so when I start digging into why is there so much hate, especially when it comes to Christian faith, I understand. It is indeed an inner conflict. Paul tells us this, Romans chapter 7, verse 7:15. I do not understand what I do, but what I do, I do not want to do, but what I hate, I do. So even when I claim faith and I claim biblical worldview, then you understand inside of me there is this battle that went on, and every now and then the very things that I say that I hate are the things I do myself. And you know what the world says to us when we do that? Hypocrite. And you know what? They're right. Okay? They are 100% right. Because inside, I'm still dealing with that same battle. There's my clicker again. 1 John chapter 3, verses 11 through 15. For this is the message you heard from the beginning. We should love one another. Do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one, and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because of his own actions were evil. His brothers were righteous. Do not be surprised, my brothers and sisters, if the world hates you. So when you go out into the world, Jesus is 100% right, and you a guarantee. If you make this choice, I am going to take a biblical worldview. I am going to put God in the center. I'm going to live my life and make God the center of my life choices. It's coming. It's coming. Followers of Christ will be the recipient of hate. If they persecute me, they will persecute you also. If they obey my teachings, they will obey you also. There's always going to be conflict. Luke chapter 6, verse 22. Blessed are you when people hate you. Okay, that makes no sense to me. When they exclude you. Okay, that makes no sense to me. And insult you. I don't feel very blessed all of a sudden. And reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Matthew chapter 24, verse 9. Then you will be handed over and persecuted to be put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. If you take a stand, please know, it's coming. If they persecuted you, if they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. The inability to handle the hate, well, sometimes it leads to people deciding to walk away from the faith. That's what happens according to Matthew chapter 24:10. A time is coming when many will turn away from the faith and be betrayed and hate each other. So we begin to have faith, and as the confrontation begins to build, the hate begins to become something that comes out of us. But to overcome the hate, we must stand firm, not attack strong. Matthew chapter 13, verse 13 says, everyone who hated you because of me, but the one who stands firm in the end, to the end, will be saved. So Jesus is telling me that when I'm hated, I'm not supposed to go on the attack. I'm just supposed to stand there. Okay, that makes me sound like a punching bag. I'm not a very good punching bag. I tend to punch back. And so I read all of these verses, and you know what it means to me? This is nonsense. Who on their right mind would choose this kind of a life? Why would you take a biblical worldview when it's going to bring the world toward you and it's going to bring hate? It's going to bring confrontation. So we come up with this little saying. Have you ever said this? How many people have ever said this in their entire life? I have. Love the sinner, hate the sin. It makes a really cool bumper sticker. Can you really do it? Can you separate a person from their sin to where you can talk about their sin and it not get personal? Can you? I ain't figured out how to do this yet. Because I can tell you, anytime I want to talk to somebody about their sin, it gets personal in a huge way. Can I truly love a sinner and hate the sin? That's a good question. Usually when we begin to try to love sinners but hate the sin, you know what we end up with, don't you? Yeah, we end up with judgment. John chapter 7, verse 24. Stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly. We start off with the great intention that we're going to love the sinner. We want to show the sinner that we love them, but then we're going to talk all about the things that they do wrong, and then eventually what do we get? We judge them. We have decided that what you are doing is not just wrong. We even go so far as sometimes that, well, you can't be a Christian if. It leads us to justifying. Isn't that interesting? On one side we judge, on the other side when it comes to me we justify. Luke chapter 16, verse 15, he said to them, you are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight. So when I begin to try to love the sinner but hate the sin, I judge and I justify, but seldom do I Jesus. Huh? Seldom do I Jesus. Moreover, the Father judges no one but has entrusted all to the judgment of the Son. So seldom do I come to the idea that, hey, the world is hating me. I've got to solve the hate. I don't want to be hated. So you know what? I'm going to explain to them all the things they've done wrong. I'm going to love them but hate their sin. And eventually, you know what comes out of it? Not very much Jesus. So this morning, I want to see if I can change your perspective a little bit. Not change your mind. You go home and decide whether or not you're going to change your mind. Let me see if I can change your perspective. So here's the one thing. If you take nothing else out of this sermon today, take out this fact. Hate from a biblical worldview is a one-way street. Here's what that means. The world is allowed to hate us, but we are not allowed to hate back. You realize I've just solved like 80% of all church problems right there, right? The world is allowed to rail. The world is allowed to say. The world is allowed to do. And no, I'm not supposed to be a punching bag, but I am not allowed to hate back. The worldly answer to hate is retaliation. You have heard what it is said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. I have heard people quote that and say, well, that's in the Bible. Well, it's in the Bible. You just didn't listen to the whole teaching. And we have used this. I have heard it. I have said it. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, they did to me, therefore I will retaliate. Of course, the problem is you just stopped a little short because Jesus wasn't talking about retaliation. You see, the biblical answer to hate is Jesus. Huh? The biblical answer to hate is Jesus. You get it. If I didn't strike a nerve, if I didn't strike a nerve with saying something is sin, then they already understand this concept. They don't need to know more about sin. They need to know more and more about Jesus. Because he is the biblical answer to hate. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. What's the ultimate love I can have for somebody? Tell them about Jesus, right? Tell them about Jesus. Well, I don't like what you're saying about Jesus. Well, okay, now your problem is not with me. Now your problem is between you and Jesus. I put the hate back where the hate belongs, right? And I've taken my retaliation stance, and understand, I'm a good retaliator. I'm a good retaliator. I'm a good fighter. Especially when it comes to words. I'm a great arguer. But I'm not supposed to. If they come and they argue the point with me, I'm supposed to stop and say, hey, let's not talk about that. Let's just talk about Jesus. Let's solve that problem first, because until we get that problem solved, this is always going to cause an argument and a discussion, because I can't tell you if God can create a rock big enough that he can't pick up. Because that's a question I can't answer. I can't explain the universe as it began years ago. That's out of my depth. I can't fully explain heaven. I've tried a few times and it gives me a headache. But you know what I can't fully explain? I can explain Jesus. And if you choose to hate that, then I'm not the target anymore. To respond in hate is to respond worldly. That's what Jesus is talking about here. You notice when he prayed the prayer, he didn't say, God, send them out. I'm sending them out into the world. Will you please arm them to the hilt so they can protect themselves? Mm-mm. Because he doesn't want us to retaliate. He wants us to share the gospel. In, not of. When it comes to our biblical perspective, unfortunately, sometimes we are just trying to win, right? We have a term. Let's go win the lost. It's not a prize, folks. Let's go win my crown. I'm not just trying to make it to the finish line. I'm not just trying to survive. When we get into a survivor or a win-now mode, then you get what we're going to do, right? We're going to hate along with the world. But if I truly have a biblical worldview, then all the hate I see out in the world, we say, you know what? Go ahead. Hate away. I'm not going to participate in the hate anymore. I'm going to talk about Jesus. I'm going to make a life choice that, you know what? I'm going to live the best I can. I'm going to follow God. I am going to have my moments where I'm going to fall flat on my face. And you know what? You're going to look at me and laugh and say, how can you possibly be a Christian if you do that? But when I do that and I fall flat on my face, I'm going to get it back up off the ground. I'm going to ask for forgiveness from God. I'm going to show you what the meaning of grace and mercy is, because I'm going to keep right on pressing toward the mark. That is Jesus. Not heaven. Not a relationship. Not to be the best nation in the universe. Folks, we need to change our perspective. If I truly believe God is God, then I truly believe Jesus came from God, and Jesus is God, and Jesus came to rescue the world, then that should be the driving force between every decision I make in my life. Here's the question. Do you have that kind of a biblical worldview for you, where it's all or nothing for Jesus? Or are we busy defending our territory? Busy saying the things that we think are going to make us sound righteous, only to understand it's going to result in nothing but hate.